KALW.
I'm not surprised by these results, but city politics are going to change quite dramatically.
Today, we go to Oakland to check on election results and how they'll change the city.
I do think we're seeing the consolidation of really decades of activism by people concerned about police accountability.
We'll hear what passed, who won seats, and what it all means for the town. Then we'll hear about a band that's always switching things up.
I named the band the Secret MC Society because it is a secret frequently who will be in the band.
And an anthology filled with stories of mystery and murder is set in Berkeley.
That for me is urban noir. I feel it's a party, it's a ride.
That's coming up. I'm Hanat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Well, we are still all awaiting the news on the presidential election. Locally, though, a lot has been determined in elections held all over the Bay Area. And today, we'll go to Oakland to get a post-election update. The town voted on a number of local measures on Tuesday, and it appears they have all passed, including ones that would institute a fine limit on illegal dumping, strengthen the Police Oversight Commission, and lower the voting age on school board elections. Plus, four Oakland districts voted for city council and school board members. I talked to Darwin Bond Graham, news editor at the Oakland Side, earlier today to hear more and see what they're following post-election. So let's start with the Oakland City Council race. There were five city council positions on the ballot, and the results so far are showing that three incumbents are being reelected. And then over in West Oakland, it looks like there's a newcomer, Carol Fife, is winning out over incumbent Lynette Gibson. McElhaney in East Oakland, it looks like Trayva Reed is in the lead. So how do you see City Hall politics in Oakland changing with this election? And were there any surprises for you?
I'm not surprised by these results, but city politics are going to change quite dramatically. Lynette Gibson McElhaney was part of this group called the Equity Caucus. And this was a group of four city council members who were more or less aligned with Mayor Libby Schaff on some questions around the city budget, especially around policing and the recent defund the police demands that some activists have been making. So Lynette Gibson McElhaney, if she loses her seat, if these results hold, and we'll know more later today. But if she loses her seat to Carol Fife, and if Dan Kolb remains in District 1, and if District 7, it looks like it's going to Trayva Reed, those results would shift the council away from the mayor. So there wouldn't be as much alignment there. We could see more contentious politics going forward.
Mm. And then you mentioned policing. So on the ballot was Measure S1, which would strengthen the Oakland Police Commission. That also looks like it'll pass. What do you think the effects of this measure are really going to be?
Yeah, this is really a cleanup effort to try to fix some problems that arose when the police commission tried to exert some authority over the past couple years. There was a lot of pushback. Part of it was just because they didn't have their own legal counsel and they didn't have this inspector general position. So those two positions are being put directly under the oversight of the commission now. It'll give the police commission a lot more power. Interestingly, the Oakland Police Officers Association did not oppose this ballot measure. They actually endorsed it and spent a little money advertising for it. So there was no opposition. It is winning so far by a landslide. I cannot imagine this reversing as we get more, as more votes come in later on. It's currently winning by 81%.
Mm-hmm. And let's just stay in policing for a bit, since this is also kind of your area of specialty. There were a number of police oversight measures on the ballot around the Bay Area. And, you know, just overall around the country, that's kind of the mood, right? Either defund the police or police oversight. Here in the Bay Area, do you think so far that we're seeing a substantial change in police reform right now? Or is this
like baby steps and still early.
I mean, civilian oversight of police is not a super radical idea. It's actually, you know, in theory, it's what always existed. But yeah, setting up these independent commissions and giving them more teeth, recent state level efforts to, you know, unseal or make, you know, no longer confidential police personnel files. These are all really big deals. And yeah, in the last, you know, 5 years alone, just in the last 2 years, we've seen incredible steps in terms of greater transparency and accountability for policing. Yeah, I do think we're seeing the consolidation of really decades of activism by people concerned about police accountability. We're seeing that consolidating actually now and being codified in these new oversight boards and these new transparency laws. It's a pretty interesting moment.
Mm-hmm. And what are you looking at next? What will you be covering? What will you be focused on?
Yeah, I mean, in Oakland, what's really interesting is the school board. It looks like all of the school board races, currently no one has a majority of the votes. And we'll know more later as more votes are counted. There was a huge amount of money spent this year by these opposing interest groups, the teachers union on one side and these more like pro-charter school policy organizations. They're very strong ideological and political divide in Oakland. And one of those two coalitions may be taking over the Oakland school board here.
Let's talk about the mood in Oakland right now. You know, one of the things about the city of Oakland, it always has an opinion about not just local, but national politics. Yesterday, people were out on the street in front of City Hall in downtown Oakland. Oakland side had reporters out there, photographers. Is there any sense from your team about who was out there demonstrating at City Hall yesterday and what they were saying?
Yeah, totally. It was a coalition of groups with a lot of different interests. There were climate justice activists out there. There were people with organizations that are concerned with police accountability. There were a lot of racial justice groups out there. A very broad coalition. There were some union members from different Bay Area labor organizations out there. And the message overall was count every vote. There's clearly a lot of concern nationwide, you know, that some votes won't get counted and the outcome of the presidential election could skew towards President Donald Trump if that's the case. So that seemed to be the message out there yesterday. There was concern in the city that, you know, if the results had gone kind of sideways and there had been, you know, a very contested election, there was concern that there could have been large-scale protests in the city of Oakland. The police department in particular was concerned about this, and they had even asked a federal judge to kind of lift some restrictions on what kind of like crowd control weapons that they can use, because they're currently under an injunction to not use these types of weapons. So they were asking for some changes because they were so concerned that there could have been large-scale protests. But we haven't seen those kinds of really big disruptive protests. Yesterday's event was a bit more mellow, although the message was strident.
Okay, Darwin Bond Graham, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
That's Darwin Bond Graham, news editor at the Oakland side. And by the way, since the time of our interview earlier today, the results of some of the races we talked about may now be out. Go to oaklandside.org for the updates. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. We're going to stay in Oakland for our next piece, but we're pivoting from election mood
to queer country music. Cindy Emch is the queer country lead singer for the band The Secret Emchy Society. The band's latest album is called The Chaser, and it features queer themes infused with the twang of Southern country, with songs that talk about longing, heartbreak, passion, and joy. In this edition of Bay Area Beats, Cindy talks about the band's history and its connection to the Bay Area.
Hi, this is Cindy Emch, Oakland's first lady of queer country and the lead singer of the Secret Emchy Society. I would describe my music style as outlaw Americana country because I feel like it really harkens back to the 50s, 60s, and 70s, but also has sort of political and leftiness to it. I first started creating music technically with my mother when she would play her accordion when I was a small child, and I would sing along with these 1920s cabaret songs. But myself personally, I had a job working at a city boat launch back in Michigan and taught myself how to play guitar with a Leonard Cohen and a Tom Waits songbook. So that was when I first started really playing my own music. Being a queer woman performing country music has been surprisingly welcoming. I've had anxiety for sure about, you know, traveling into some smaller towns. I remember I was on tour in Omaha, we're unloading the car, and these people pull up to us in this minivan and they get out and they're all like, huh, so you're blue, huh? Because I had, you know, Bernie stickers. And I was like, yeah, because I'm outspoken. Like, I'm not going to back down. And they got all smiling and like, great, we're with the other band. We want us to help you unload. And it was like so scary for a minute. They were like, yeah, don't worry about it. If anyone gives you any crap, just come get us. We protect the blue in our town. And I was just like, what? My last name is so hard to pronounce for a lot of people that just playing as my own name hasn't really worked. But back when I was doing a lot of poetry and spoken word, an MC one time added a Y to the end of my name to make it easier to pronounce. They said, well, now you're Emshi, like Kimshi. And I was like, okay, if that works. And it strangely really has. I've been performing with the Secret Emchy Society for approximately 6 years. I'd been in a number of bands previously that unfortunately had to break up because of geography. The Bay Area is so expensive, and I have lost 3 bands to people being not able to afford to stay here. I named the band the Secret Emchy Society because it is a secret frequently who will be in the band. It's always me, like I am the constant, but when I tour, I often have to tour by myself because I can't afford to take an entire band with me. And so I have musicians in other towns that can just hop on stage and play with me. Performing in the Bay Area has absolutely formed me as a musician and performer in every single kind of way. When I first moved here in the late 90s, all my friends were punk rockers. I formed an accordion junk band with my good friend John Flaw from San Francisco, and we were really informed by the steampunk and drag communities of San Francisco, and the country music was all inspired by my sort of East Bay roots. And so everything about the Bay Area, how diverse it is, the many different like styles and cultures that come together, that's absolutely what inspired all of the music I create and how I perform. Like a song.
And we dance like the world is ending.
There are a few things about performing in the Bay Area that are different. One thing is there will always be a much better bourbon selection, but one of the other things that is so different is that I feel like it's often a very open-hearted crowd. I have frequently had audience members come up to me, sometimes laughing, you know, maniacally, and sometimes with tears in their eyes, to tell me how a song like made their day or touched them, or they identified with some of the themes or experiences I was singing about. And in other places, that definitely still happens, but the Bay Area really has a market on people feeling comfortable to come up and share their experience with your song with you. If I had advice for any musicians that wanted to start performing out once we're allowed to again, definitely pay attention to who else in your community is making the kind of music you like. You know, whether it's local in the Bay Area, I mean, any genre you want to play, if you're in the Bay Area, someone's playing it and they're doing a great job. And they're probably really, really friendly about meeting other people who are doing it, because we're a pretty nice bunch. I feel like it's a really welcoming community overall, and I'm just so incredibly appreciative.
This edition of Bay Area Beats was produced by Porfirio Rangel. The Secret Emchi Society's album, The Chaser, is out now. Plus, you can catch them playing on a live stream nearly every Sunday through November. We'll have a link to all that at KALW.org.
I carve my name on the ceiling in tar while we're all drinking booze, telling stories of guns and lakes and bad ideas.
This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. When you think of the city of Berkeley, what likely comes to mind? Maybe the Cal Bears or the city's history of activism. What about noir? Writers featured in the anthology Berkeley Noir present a darker side of the city with tales of murder and deceit. Jerry Thompson and Owen Hill have spent a lot of time in Berkeley, either living or working there, and they love noir. Jerry and Owen are co-editors of the book Berkeley Noir, and they spoke with KALW's Janae Darden.
Okay, I know you both are writers, but I want to ask you, what got you into reading?
I think for me, it was trying to find a doorway to finding myself. And I always think that when writers are creating characters, I'm looking for me in those characters. I'm looking for landscapes, and that's going to help me define who I am or find out the nuances that help me discover who I am. Reading is a way in and a way out, and a way back in again.
What about you, Owen? What got you into reading?
I came to reading mysteries and noir early because it was around the house. My parents liked pocketbook mysteries, and they were just there. So on a boring day, I would pick them up, and they'd be maybe a little over my head. But that became my doorway into reading other things too. If I wanted to pick books that were important to me, though, they would mostly be books of poetry, starting with Edgar Allan Poe when I was young, and then moving on through the beat poets, Allen Ginsberg and people like that. That's what opened it up for me. And I think I much of it responded to the rhythms of poetry at the same time listening to songs that seemed to translate very well.
What is it about noir? Ooh, Owen is smiling. Why noir? It's fun, but it's dark too.
It's fun and it leads you into those dark places in a way that is also entertaining. So it's if you're reading very heavy literature, which I can love too, it's just heavy. But with noir, you have a story and you have characters that sometimes are even funny. But then before you know it, it's taken you to that dark side of your brain. And for some reason, that's really satisfying, like in the way that horror movies are satisfying.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I particularly love when you have a character who is basically two people, the deception of a character. You think you see one person, or the main character, in a way that you think, oh, I can follow this person along. But then you realize, oh, this person is completely doing something different. And that's exciting to me, the deception, the dual character personality.
Okay, you said dual personality. And I feel like Berkeley, in this book, Berkeley Noir, what we know about Berkeley, you know, college town, hippies. And we see this other personality of Berkeley, which is killers.
Beneath the surface, there's a whole other thing going on. We're flipping the script on the landscape that we have been celebrating. It's still there, but underneath it, I consider it like a slow brown gravy burn. And you're stirring it up and you're looking around, you think, oh, this is going to be delicious. And then you realize, this could kill me.
Because that's the thing, like Berkeley, when I heard you were doing Berkeley Noir, and I was like, I don't think of Berkeley as a city, you know, of noir. I mean, not to say that crime doesn't happen in Berkeley, but it's funny. I don't think of Berkeley as, you know, noir. Like, what's happening at the, you know, at the Ashby flea market? It's like something going down.
That's the allure of this particular collection. One reviewer called it Crime Without the Grime.
I work Friday nights before the close down. I work Friday nights on Telegraph with Jerry. And if you want to come down at 10 o'clock on a Friday night to Telegraph Avenue when we're closing up, and you'll see noir. It's a pretty tough street. You got a little crime. You have some unfortunate people who are sleeping in our doorway, and the breeze is blowing the papers down Telegraph Avenue. It looks like a 40s movie sometimes.
That is true.
It's there if you're looking for it.
There's also the humor and the humanity. They're all not bad people. They've done bad things, and they're prone to perhaps more bad things, but they're also good people. The idea of redemption and striving to get through whatever issue they're going through, that resonates with, I think, most of the stories in the collection, because it's about being able to say, you know, I'm considered a bad person, but I'm also not that bad, but don't cross me or something like that.
That's one of the sort of the nihilist side of noir, where good people get caught up in these horrible situations. And I think the stories really illustrate that nicely.
And noir is interesting because there's noir with family. And then there's just some real seedy stuff with some gangster stuff. I mean, there's such a range of it. It doesn't just take place at night. It's not just about gangsters, you know, or murder. It's not just about murder.
Indeed. And there's one story in particular by Shampi Thakaran, whose narrator, whose protagonist, is a rat. That rat sees everything. So hilarious. I mean, just total noir. Love it. The best story in the collection, though, I have to say, is Righteous Kill by Owen Hill.
I put him up to that.
He must want you to come back and help him do another one. So he's like this.
I might choose Summer Brenner's story as my favorite, although my favorites change back and forth all the time. So, but that's a big one for me.
And I like to add that for me, it was about the rhythm of the aesthetic from one story to the next, making sure that was there's a continuity between the very first story, where we are and where we end up, and feeling the vibration of each story was a primary goal for me, making sure that through the editing, it was some sort of rhythm, some movement. You felt that connection, you felt the stories. That for me is birth memoir. I feel like it's a party, it's a ride. It's an up, it's a down. You get down, you get out, you get over it. I mean, you're feeling it, so.
Jerry Thompson and Owen Hill are co-editors of the book Berkeley Noir. They spoke with KLW's Janae Darden. Today's Cross Currents team includes Azul Ekman, David Exume, Annalise Finney, Sonia Narung, and Marissa Ortega-Welch. Our engineers are James Rollins and Gabe Graben. Production manager is Shirin Adil. Managing editor is David Boyer. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.